This episode is brought to you by Visit Ithaca. Ithaca, New York boasts an authentic craft beverage experience, tasty farm-to-table culinary adventures, and scenic outdoor recreation among 150 waterfalls. Plan your trip today with help from visitithaca.com.
Hey, this is Hannah, HRN's program manager. It's HRN's 10th anniversary and now our summer fun drive. So show your support for independent, revolutionary, entertaining food radio by becoming a monthly recurring donor. HRN is powered by a passionate community of thoughtful eaters, and we need each and every one of you to show your support so that we can keep bringing you your favorite food podcasts. It takes a village, and every dollar donated, every listener tuning in is essential to our continued success. So set up a donation for $10 every month. You'll show us that you want to be a part of a bright future for HRN. And you'll get one of our brand new limited edition Pizza Pocket t-shirts. So snag your new favorite tea and show us some love, all for the price of about two fancy lattes each month. Go to heritageradionetwork.org/donate today, and thank you.
Hello, welcome to All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Sherry Bayer, and we're coming to you live from Roberta's Restaurant in Bushwick, Brooklyn. It is Wednesday, June 12th, 2019. This is the 217th episode of the series, which is dedicated to behind-the-scenes talents in the hospitality industry. Today, my guest is a global leader in the food world and executive director of a major organization of food professionals, and I will introduce her fully in a moment. First, as I do in every show, I will start out with my PR tip. Later, we will have my speed round game, industry news discussion, solo dining experience, and the final question. As the founder of Bayer Public Relations, I'm going to tip the show off with my PR tip of the week. So today's tip is to be an effective leader. But how exactly does one do so? So I recently attended the Welcome Conference in New York City and heard Simon Sinek speak. He has the third most watched TED Talk of all time entitled, How Great Leaders Inspire Action. Simon gave tips on leadership, including having a just cause, cultivating trusting teams, having competition and a worthy rival, plus flexibility and the courage to lead. Now, none of this is easy, but it is all possible. So learn to lead, probably first by going and watching Simon's talk. That's my tip today. Now, I'm really excited to have my guest here with me in the studio. It is Tanya Steele. She is a global leader in the food world who is currently the executive director of IACP, the International Association of Culinary Professionals. Tanya is is the award director for the Julia Child Award, an adjunct professor at NYU, and author of Food Fight, a mouthwatering history of who ate what and why through the ages. She conceived Canada's Food Kid Food Nation, as well as the Healthy Lunch Challenge and Kids State Dinner with First Lady Michelle Obama. She's the former editorial director of Clean Plates, Epicurious, Gourmet Live, and Gourmet.com. She was an editor of Bon Appetit and Food and Wine, a writer for the New York Times, and a best-selling cookbook author. She's won many accolades. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Sherry. And I always get choked up whenever I talk about myself too, but choked up in the sad way, not in the happy way that you're getting choked up.
Yeah, no, something got in my throat there for a minute, but I have to say though, your background and reading this bio and I cut it down is so impressive. And I don't know how you've accomplished all of this, and I want to dive into it and find out. At least let's start with your background. Like, how did you get into the food world and editorial positions? Because I remember meeting you many, many years ago when you were with Epicurious and Bon Appetit, but There was something happened to happen before that.
Yes, exactly. Well, I think what happened to me before that, which is true with so many people in the food industry, is that my mother, God bless her, was and is a terrible cook. I mean, to this day, you only want to trust her with tea and coffee. I mean, but that's very important. Those skills of tea and coffee are extremely important, so bless her for that. But she grew up in Africa and grew up in a household where she never was allowed to cook. And so, consequently, when we came to the U.S., I was born in London, we came here when I was a little girl, and I started to realize that she was A, a bad cook, and B, there was actually really good food out there, and I wanted to get some of it. And I had this epiphany moment when I was about 7 or 8 years old watching Julia Child on PBS and watching The French Chef. And I realized, oh my goodness, actually, a roast chicken is really not that difficult. You just put it in the oven, you know. you hopefully don't drop it on the floor like she did, and you put it in the oven. And that's about all you have to do to make something delicious and healthy. And so that's when I started cooking. And I really do think that Julia Child, I always say she's one of my patron saints. I love everything she stands for and was, and so I take a lot of inspiration from her. But that's really how I started in the food profession. I just realized that there was great food out there, and I wasn't getting it.
So at what age was this that you started cooking?
It was really early. It was really about 7 or 8 years old. And my mother just, you know, she was young at the time and didn't think anything, you know, worry about me with knives and heat. And I just started to cook for the family. And that's one of the reasons why I've worked so hard to get kids in the kitchen and to get them to be really interested in cooking and, you know, trying every type of food and being kind of embracing the world of food and healthy food specifically, so that we can really kind of get this generation to be the healthiest, strongest it can be.
Yeah, no, it's so important. Did you go to college for journalism, or did you, what was your, how did you get your foot in the door? And did you think you wanted to work in kitchens when you were younger, or what did you, once you were cooking and you were inspired, what career were you looking at?
You know, it's an interesting question. When I was in college, I never considered going into the kitchen or being a chef. And in fact, at that time, which we're talking about the early 80s now, so I'm, you know, you can tell I'm getting up there. It wasn't, being a chef was not a thing at that moment. There were some chefs that were becoming personalities, but it was not a big profession like it is now. And you were certainly not a rock star the way, although they were rock stars, but they were unrecognized rock stars.
Right.
So I went for journalism, and my first job out of college was at Mademoiselle Magazine. And I wrote for, I wrote a beauty Q&A column, which is hilarious. I think about it now because it was, you know, help. You know, my boyfriend hates my purple mascara. What do I do? You know, and I would write the answers. But I realized that beauty and fashion were not what I wanted to do, and that food really was. And there was an ad in the New York Times, and yes, there were classified job ads in the New York Times at that time. And I answered it, and it was for Food and Wine magazine. And I guess this was probably the mid to late 80s by that point. And I had an amazing interview and got this great job for assistant editor and worked with this amazing team that taught me so much under Isla Stanger, who was the editor-in-chief at that time. And I learned through copy editing, through fact-checking. I used to fact-check Robert Parker's wine column. You know, all of the kind of the big eminent degrees of today are people that I would, you know, copy edit recipe, copy edit, fact check, and then eventually edit. And it was such a great training ground. I think anyone who wants to be a writer really should be a copy editor first, because it really makes you think about the kind of the recipe of the words that you're using, kind of the formulation that you're using. So that was an amazing training ground at Food and Wine. And it was a fantastic time to be there, because this was really the time when American cuisine became a real thing, a recognized, respected cuisine around the world. It was the time of, you know, Markle McCarty and Alice Waters and all of these people starting to come to the fore, and California cuisine becoming kind of a big thing. Nouvelle cuisine had kind of been the wave right before that, and then American cuisine really came into it, and Jasper White and all of these people. So it was an amazing time to be at Food & Wine because I got introduced into this incredible world of people that were creating, you know, kind of new ways to look at food, particularly with American ingredients.
Yes, absolutely. And I was thinking back, I had an internship at Food Arts Magazine, and I did fact checking of the articles, and it certainly was a great way to learn and get to know people in the industry and learn. So I didn't get as far as I did little editing and writing. Now I do some writing, but definitely it's an amazing background. So then you talk about a bit about Epicurious and Bon Appetit. And I mean, all these publications you work for, I remember when Epicurious launched. I mean, that was a big deal because like the internet was all of a sudden a big thing. But what was that experience like? And how were these publications a bit the same and a bit different?
You know, it's very interesting going from one to the next, and I don't think that many people have done that. I think I'm one of the more unusual anomalies to have worked at kind of all of the major ones at one time or another. And they each had their own personality and their own mission and their own philosophy and their own voice. And so kind of understanding what that voice was and trying to contribute and make the voice even better in any way that I could possibly do it was really an amazing thing. And when I was at Bon Appetit, I was there for 10 years. It was a fantastic job. And I ran the New York office because it was based in Los Angeles at the time. And it was, again, a very creative, interesting time to be there. The celebrity chef philosophy and world was really starting to take off at that point. So it was really kind of, we were really reporting on who, what, when, and where more than anything else, and also giving a reflection of how American consumers were really reflecting what was going on in restaurant kitchens. Restaurant kitchens really led the trend at that time, way more so than they have before or after. It's really interesting to think about how we cook today and how we cooked then. It really was very much inspired by chefs. Chefs are still so incredibly inspirational, but we don't really try to aspire to cook in the same way that a chef does anymore. I think we're, as a people, much more focused on kind of authenticity and using local ingredients and doing it in a much more simplified way, while still appreciating what chefs do. But at Bon Appetit, it was just a really wonderful time. It was I made so many friends there that I'm still friends with, and it really kind of inculcated myself as a writer and an editor, which at the end of the day, I think of myself as a writer. But when Epicurious started, it was really 2005. It was not the dawn of the internet, but it was certainly one of the first on the internet, certainly one of the first food properties on the internet for sure. And I came there, I think I came in there 2005. I think it launched in 1998 is what it was. And when I came over from Bon Appetit, it was a recipe database primarily with content from the magazines, from Bon Appetit and Gourmet and Traveler. And I was so lucky that Conde Nast said to me, you know, we're going to trust you with a little tiny amount of money and a little tiny team, and you can just go and do whatever it is that you want. And so I was so lucky that I had the freedom and the kind of the creative license to do what I wanted, which was to make it a fully functional, standalone food editorial product on its, you know, on its own without using any other content from other properties, although we did use all of the recipes from the magazines, which was fantastic and a gift. So it was an amazing time. I remember just learning so much. The transition from print to digital was insane. I always say it was like going from zero kids to two kids, which is what I did go. I had twins.
Right.
And so it was just, the learning curve was intense. And I remember thinking, what are all of these acronyms? You know, what are you talking about? CMS and all this kind of, you know, what's an app? I remember being in a meeting and someone coming in and saying, there's a company called Apple and we need to, they're going to make something called an iPhone and we need to make something called an app. And I don't know what an app is. And we'd have to kind of figure out what an app could be and what would you want, what kind of food would you want on the phone? So, and that's how we created the Epicurious app. So it was in a really amazing time and just, I feel so lucky to have been at the beginning of all of these things to help, get my own learnings and, contribute in my small way to all of these things. It was really a blessing.
You did incredible with it. I mean, that's like an understatement of the year. I mean, where it's gone, it's quite remarkable.
You. Well, I'm just so lucky that I've always had an amazing team of people that I work with. So everyone, I always say, forget about marry up, hire up, always just hire like the smartest, most wonderful people you can ever find. And, you'll do great. It's like making a perfect plate of pasta. You just get a few perfect ingredients and that's all you need. So that's really true with a team.
That's a great tip. Okay, let's take a little break here, and we're going to come back. We'll talk more with Tanya, so stay with us. This is All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network.
This episode is brought to you by Visit Ithaca. Located in New York's Finger Lakes region, Ithaca boasts an authentic craft beverage experience, tasty farm-to-table culinary adventures, and scenic outdoor recreation. As the saying goes, Ithaca is gorgeous. The city is home to 150 waterfalls and gorges sprinkled through its downtown and sloping hillsides. State parks and acres of natural lands offer outdoor recreation for every level of enthusiast. Come stroll among the cool ravines, scenic hiking trails, and natural vistas. Ithaca is home to Ivy League Cornell University and Ithaca College, resulting in an influx of new cultures, new tastes, and new energy every year. There's so much to explore, from art galleries and museums to unique attractions like the Cornell Lab of Ornithology. Ithaca sits at the heart of a blossoming heritage and craft cider industry. Some of these delicious ciders can be bought in market, but many of the most unique varieties can only be experienced with a visit to Ithaca and this great cider region. Go to visitithaca.com to get inspired and plan your trip today. We'll take your time.
Welcome back to All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network. I'm Sherry Bayer. My guest today is Tanya Steele. She's the Executive Director of IACP, the International Association of Culinary Professionals, which I want to get into. But before we do, we have to talk for a minute about Michelle Obama, because you conceived Canada's Kid Food Nation and Healthy Lunchtime Challenge and Kid State Dinner with the First Lady, Michelle Obama. I mean, how did you conceive this and work with Michelle Obama? I'm fascinated by that.
Well, it's really a dream come true. And, I always tell kids, try to dream big because you never know. You could actually accomplish it. So it's important to have the dream first. As I was saying earlier, cooking with kids has been a big thing for me ever since I was a kid. When I had my own kids, I realized I didn't really know how to feed them properly or healthfully. And so I ended up writing a book called Real Food for Healthy Kids. And I was in at Epicurious in my office above Times Square, and on my phone, I saw the phone rang and I saw XXX as the number. And I thought, oh, someone from the New York Times is calling me because, when they call you,
right. It's
an X'd out number. And I thought, oh, it's just a friend of mine. So I pick up the phone and say hi. And they said, hi, we're calling from the First Lady's office. And we have your cookbook, and we really like Epicurious, and we wanted to talk to you about helping us promote Let's Move. And I said, oh, yeah, right. Who's, you know, pulling my leg? And they said, no, we really, it's really us from the First Lady's office.
Wow.
So that's how it started. And yeah, insane. And then it's like very soon after, I found myself at the White House going, I think I was at some event for chefs, and it was the beginning of Let's Move. That's what it was. And so I started coming up with concepts to see if they would do different things to help move the ball. And one of them was this idea that I've wanted to do for many years, which is a national recipe competition for kids. And so I pitched the idea to them, and they said, you know what, we can't really do this. It's a private-public partnership. That's what it would take, and we've never done that, and so we don't think we can do it. So I was really bummed and, you know, kind of went home with my tail between my legs. And probably maybe 2 or 3 months later, they called me back and said, you know what, we've reconsidered. And if you can kind of engineer this, then we would be willing to do it. So I got the Department of Education and the USDA in the room as well, and we worked with the First Lady's office and the White House lawyers and Condé Nast, and we got a few sponsors, I believe, and created the first one. And so it was just an amazing thing to see an idea come to fruition. And the way that the idea had come to me initially was, there's a very famous photograph of Bill Clinton shaking JFK's hand, and Bill Clinton is a teenager. It's a black and white shot. And you know that the moment that Bill Clinton, as a 16-year-old, shook JFK's hand, that changed the world. That moment changed the world, for good or for bad or whatever you think. That was a moment that really, you know, kind of had a ripple effect. And so I was in the shower once, and I thought, wouldn't it be amazing to have that ripple effect with, you know, President Obama and Mrs. Obama, be able to give a kid that moment where they touch, you know, the hand of greatness and are so inspired and aspire to be the greatest that they can be. And so that's how this whole idea came to me, and that's why I pitched it to them. So anyway, we had the first one, and I was kind of sequestered in the green room, which is next to the blue room, which is the main kind of public room that you see all the time. It's that famous room now where Comey is standing next to the curtains, and he goes and shakes Trump's hand. That's that room. So I'm standing in the room next door to it as every family is coming, having their photo taken with Mrs. Obama, and then leaving. And as they come into my room, the green room, which has got the oldest things in the White House, it's got the John Adams tea set, and it's just this amazing, gorgeous room. People were crying. And so each time they would come into the room and cry, I would cry. And it was such an incredible, I mean, just chilling moment of just beauty and joy. And I thought, God, if I could only do this, you know, forever and just keep this going. So we did it for 5 years. And I then talked to the government in Canada and said, you should do something that is inspired by this. Not the same thing, obviously, but something that has the same mission statement, which is really to get kids to feel excited and energized about cooking and eating healthfully. And so we started Kid Food Nation. So it was really an amazing, amazing experience. I spent quite a bit of time, you know, so in the White House. I was probably there about 20 times. It was just, and each time, I mean, I would just get chills. Like, this is where Mary Lincoln and Lincoln were, you know, I mean, just FDR and Eleanor Roosevelt, it freaked me out each time. And I always said to the kids the night before, because we would have this elaborate sequence where all of the kids were flown to Washington, D.C. on the weekend in July, and they all attended the Kids' State Dinner, and they were all announced like prime ministers. And so the night before, I would give them a little speech, kind of like what to do and what not to do. You know, I want my kids to behave, whether they're my kids or, you know, someone else's kids. But I would always remind them that this is an incredibly important moment, and that they're here for a reason, and we expect big things. And in fact, at the White House, at the Kids' State Dinner, I would speak, and then I would have a kid speak, and that kid would introduce Mrs. Obama, and Mrs. Obama would speak. And then the president would come and shake everyone's hand, and he'd say a few words, and you know, it's just incredible moment. And I still am in contact with so many of those kids who have gone on to do miraculous things, as I knew they would, and started, you know, nonprofits and charities, and just have gone on to be just stellar human beings. And I just know they're going to be just huge leaders.
I'm pretty much speechless, really. Incredible isn't a good enough word to describe that and what you've done and what this whole program has done. And actually, when I was looking at the, you know, at that you had this in Canada, I was thinking, oh, maybe she's from Canada. You know, that was initially my thought, you're not.
No,
you know?
I'm from England.
So it's just that you've been able to initiate this and have this relationship and this experience. It's incredible.
It is incredible, and I feel so lucky that it happened. And I do want to do it throughout the world. It's one of the things that I really would love to do. And I almost did it in the UK in my homeland, but it didn't work out at the last second. But I do really want to do this as something moving forward.
And I have no doubt you won't do it. Like, you're just one of those people who make this stuff happen. So, but let's talk for a little bit here about IACP.
Yes.
Because you joined as executive director, what, last year?
Yes, last fall. I took it over. And, you know, I've been a member on and off for many, many years. And the organization has gone through, you know, peaks and valleys and has grown and contracted. And I was excited about the idea of running it because I love that it's, in some ways, it's kind of a rebirth and a blank slate in that we can kind of make it the what we want. And I think that food has gone through, and food media has gone through such an incredible transition. There's been such an earthquake in terms of journalism and food journalism and the food world and the industry, and much of it for good. So I want to take this moment to really make this an organization that stands for something, that really has a national voice and an international voice that makes a big difference using the universal language of food. So that's kind of my mission. You know, our mission statement is to empower, engage, and educate our members, and to kind of spread the power of food, to use it in the most powerful way we can throughout the world. And so I'm kind of just getting started.
Yeah, and you recently had your IACP Awards or the conference in, what was it, Santa Fe,
yes.
I was just following it on social media, and I heard really wonderful things about it.
Oh, thank you.
I definitely need to attend in the future when these
That would be wonderful.
Conferences.
They're really, what's great about them is that they are really a kind of a meeting of the minds. And so we really wanted to give people some things that were inspirational. We brought a lot of interesting industry leaders like Danny Meyer and Nathan Myhrvold and Jessica Harris and Deborah Madison and Lois Ellen Frank. We really wanted to touch upon indigenous cuisine because we were in Santa Fe. So we had a ton of amazing Native American chefs and seminars and panels about Native American cuisine because it's really our first cuisine. We also then had a lot of skill-based panels and workshops, you know, about doing Instagram and video and all of the stuff that everyone needs to know at this point.
Right. So how many members are there now, and who should become a member?
I think anybody who is really into food should become a member. I mean, because you can attend events that are very special that you don't get access to if you're just a regular person. So, for instance, we're doing an event in July 1st in D.C. at Duomo with Carla Hall, and she's signing her latest cookbook, and she's going to be interviewed by Kristen Harkey of The Post, and it's going to be this really wonderful thing, and it's very inexpensive. Likewise, we're doing a sustainability wellness summit in September in New York City, and I'm hoping to get really some major voices come and speak about how we can all live more sustainably and why it's so important for us. So I'm calling it Healing Our Body, Healing Our Planet. But it really enables you to connect with people that are in the industry and people who are social influencers in the food world and really just kind of visionaries. So it's a great organization to be able to meet others that are really passionate about food.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, let me ask you, or let's play back my question from my last guest. So on episode 216, I had on Pascaline Lepeltier. She is a master sommelier. She's an MS, MOF, MSF. She's what?
Oh, my goodness. Like,
yeah. Oh, my goodness. This is the right description. She's the managing partner at Racine's restaurant in Tribeca. So let's play back her question for you.
I would ask her how today we can continue the education of food and wine professional in terms of the new challenges we are facing in our food system. How do we provide the understanding of the quality of nutrients our ingredients needs to have in order not only to make tasty food, but better food? And how is she going to work with the chef around to make that happen?
Well, that's really a great question, and it's kind of what I was just talking about with our summit. I mean, our sustainability summit is really revolving around how to create a better food system, a food system that's more equitable, that's more nutritious, that's more sustainable. My answer is always to go to the experts, so that's what we're going to be doing in September. But I would say that all of us, every single day, can make a difference in every bite that we take. And so being thoughtful, and when I say thoughtful, I don't mean mindful. I mean thoughtful about what we eat and what we buy and what we dispose of and, the issue of food waste, which is gigantic. I mean, especially in restaurants that are apparently throwing away 40% of their food. So that's an insane number.
Yeah, absolutely.
And just a waste, of in every possible way, both for the restaurant, the earth, and the consumer. So we do need to kind of grapple with this question. And I think we need, it really takes a kind of a multi-sector, multi-pillar bunch of stakeholders to come together and try to figure this out. The great thing is that it just really needs to start with one person. And so I think that if enough people focus on this issue, there will be a significant change. And one thing I really love about this generation of millennials is that they are very, very laser focused on this, and as they should be. This is absolutely the existential crisis that we're facing as an earth, and we need to really focus on it. One of my sons, I have identical twins, and one of them is interning at the amazing Harvard Smithsonian Astrophysics Center, which still gives me chills when I get to say that as a proud mom. And he and I were talking, and he was saying, I want to figure out how to use AI to help climate change. I was like, OMG, that is a beautiful idea. What? No, that's what you should be doing. Totally should be doing that. So I think there's going to be all of these, all of these kids are figuring this out, and trying to put a laser focus on how to stop what is, the death of all of us at some point if we don't really stop what we're doing.
Yeah, I hear you. Great question, great answer.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay, let's take another break here and we'll come back. We'll play my speed round game and talk some industry news. This is All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network. Welcome back to All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network. I'm Sherry Bayer. My guest today is Tanya Steele. It's time for my speed round game. So what this is I name a couple things, and you get to pick your preference, such as chocolate or vanilla.
Oh, wow.
So it's a choice. All right. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
I think you're going to be good at it. You're good at everything. How can you not be good
at
it? Okay. Here we go. Eat in or eat out?
Eat in.
Wine, beer, cocktail, or mocktail?
Definitely wine.
Tasting menu or a la carte?
Definitely a la carte.
Small plates or large plates?
I'm going to go with small.
Communal table or chef's counter?
Ooh, that one's a hard choice. That's a Sophie's choice. Because I love talking to chefs and watching them cook. That's so fun. It's very relaxing. But I also love talking to random people that I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. That would be a tie.
Okay. You had some definitelys there. So this evens it out with a tie.
Right.
How about tipping or all-inclusive charge?
I think I like to do tipping just because I like to tip well, because this is a profession. So I'm going to go with that.
Editing, writing, or teaching? Something else you do?
I think definitely writing. I'm a writer in my soul. So my book, I just wrote actually Food Fight, which was
a
mouthwatering history of who ate what and why through the ages, which is a book for kids with Nat Geo, all about the history of food and the history of the world. And writing that was just, it was incredible. It was just a beautiful experience. Torturous, because I had to learn the history of the world and the history of food, but it was so much fun.
And write about it.
Yes.
Yeah. No, that's, but you did.
I did. It took 3 years.
That's, I mean, it's awesome. People need to get it.
Yeah.
It's on Amazon. I found it. Okay. A couple more. Michelle Obama or any other first lady?
Oh, my goodness. There's no comparison. Michelle Obama.
Yeah, I had a feeling you might go that with that. Two more. Cheese plate or dessert?
Dessert. But that's another Sophie's choice, but yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Manhattan or Brooklyn?
You know, I grew up in Manhattan. I'm going to have to say Manhattan.
All right.
Yeah.
Great. That's the game.
That was fun.
Yeah, I always think it's fun hearing people's answers.
Yeah.
What you get stuck on or what's hard for you, not for others. Okay, so industry news picked out this article in the New York Times about how the Four Seasons is closing less than a year after reopening. And this article is by Florence Fabricant. So this is famous restaurant, opened in 1959, the original in the Seagram's building, the Four Seasons, and it closed and it reopened last year. Read they spent $30 million on reopening. It was known for its power lunch. I mean, I've seen some other articles talking about power lunch is dead, but they're pulling the plug. They're not going to keep going. And I think it's sad when restaurants close. Mm. I think they really gave it a try to reopen.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm a huge avid buff of New York City history. I think New York City history is fascinating. And they were so much a part of it. I mean, as you said, they were around for, you know, a good 50 years. And they really were the place to go for lunch. I mean, I had the great fortune of going there a couple times. And you would walk in and, you know, into the pool room and just see literally, you know, Philip Johnson just sitting there with his little black glasses, or Helen Gurley Brown, or, you know, and people would flit from table to table. And, you know, I'm sure millions of dollars of deals were made during those martini lunches. But as everything else has changed, so has the notion of the power lunch. And, you know, now a power lunch is like, you know, a yoga class and a, you know, kale smoothie. So that's the power lunch of today. And so it really defined an era, and I guess that era is now officially over.
Yeah. You know, I did one of my solo dining experiences there. I went to the new reopening, and I'd been to the original, and I'd been to the pool and the grill, and it's very special. And I actually had a really wonderful meal at the new location. I went for dinner. The food was excellent. It was a little, I don't know, it's interesting doing a revamp where I could see they're pulling from the old space but creating new. And I had a really great experience. I think price point was tough. You know, it's expensive. And also the New York Times reviewed it after it reopened, and it demoted it from 2 stars to 1. And there was, there was also much criticism or pointing out Julia Nicolini, one of the owners, resigned. It came after this article, but there was a lot of accusations of sexual harassment and things that came out in the news. So it wasn't all happy, great press for them. I think it was a struggle in a sense coming back. And actually, I read some, I think some people thought the New York Times review, you know, didn't focus really on the food, didn't focus it, focused more on the owners and history a bit. So I don't know. I don't know how much play that goes into it or not, but I had a great experience there. And again, I think it's sad when restaurants close. So
well, absolutely. And that's people's livelihoods and families who are going without money. And for sure, I mean, it is very sad. There has been a reckoning, though, which is so interesting to have watched. It kind of at the speed of light, and all of these giants that, you know, I kind of grew up writing about and knowing are all gone because of the behavior that they exhibited, yeah. You know, which was, you know, now that I never saw any of what has been reported by all of these, you know, different for all of these different people. And it's shocking to me that that went on. I mean, I know I must be naive or something, but I'm just so shocked by what was going on in so many kitchens.
Yeah, no, true. And yes, things have gotten cleaned up and it's good for the future I was thinking to tie into this. I went the other night to Pastis, which has reopened. Hmm. And I had a really lovely experience. I think I'm going to talk about it on my show. Food was great, service was great, and here's like similar yet different. I mean, a restaurant that was very well known, and it closed. It moved down the block in the meatpacking district. And I think this new revamp is fantastic, and I think it's going to thrive. That's my prediction.
But, wow, I hope so. Well, we'll knock on wood for them.
Yeah, but it's interesting. But it's Pastis is like different, but mm-hmm. the same, like legendary New York restaurant. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So, but I think people should check it out. I had a good experience there, so. Anyways, let's take another break, one more break, and then we'll come back. We'll do my solo dining experience, and we'll have the final question. This is All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network. Welcome back to All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Sherry Bayer. It's time for my solo dining experience. So this week, it's at Nobu Doha. Here's the rundown. The location, Four Seasons Hotel in Doha, Qatar, or I think it's pronounced Qatar, but I've been saying Qatar, so I'm probably saying it wrong, but it's Qatar. It's far away from here. The concept, world-class new-style Japanese cuisine. The chef, Nobu Matsuhisa. So why did I go? Because I had a 12-hour layover in Doha on my route back from Bali to New York City, and why not check out the restaurant scene? It's what I do best. So my experience. I stopped by there. It was my second meal once I was there, and I first went to the Four Seasons Hotel, the main lobby, and I was told by a nice gentleman that the restaurant is actually in a separate building, so they drove me over there. It's a lovely space. I had a wonderful server who took great care of me. We talked about New York and how I knew the owners, Drew and Tracy and Nipur in New York, and it was really a great experience. So what did I get? I had the whitefish sashimi with dry miso and a half order of the black cod butter lettuce. So my take? The fish was great. It's there. I got this dish because it's a signature dish of the Doha location compared to the hamachi with jalapeno, which everyone knows in New York is one of their signatures. And then the black miso cod is also a signature, and you can't go wrong with that. It's like just one of the most delicious dishes I could eat.
On the planet.
Yeah, I could eat it anytime. And it was just as good over there. So, yeah, really great. Okay, so the ambiance, it's a really nice space. It's on the second floor of the separate building. that has a skyline view. It has outdoor seating, and inside there's a large sushi counter, dining room, there's a separate bar area. It's pretty big. I'd say it's perfect for going solo or maybe date night, sushi date night in the Middle East. Interesting tidbit. So Nobu Doha is the world's largest Nobu restaurant perched on the Arabian Gulf. There are 22 Nobus worldwide. And Nobu's first location opened in New York City in 2004, and that's with partners Drew Neupert and Robert De Niro. Personal fun fact. So after, during this layover, what else did I do? Well, I tried to go to the Museum of Islamic Art, but it was closed because of Ramadan, and it was so hot out. It was like 110 degrees there, so I was looking for indoor activities. So then that's why I also went to another restaurant. I went to John George's Market Restaurant at the W Doha Hotel, and that was great. And then in the evening, I went to the Souk Waqif Market at night. That was my itinerary for my layover, and it was pretty cool. So the cost of my meal was $54. Would I go back? Sure, if I was ever over there. I don't know if I will be, but you never know. Their website is fourseasons.com/Doha. So there you go.
God, that sounds amazing.
It was pretty, it just kind of feels surreal. Like, yeah. Did I really do that? Was I really over there eating miso black cod?
Yeah, amazing. And how are you still standing with all of that jet lag? It's crazy.
It took me a couple of days, but yeah, it's quite a trip. But yeah, very cool. So let's do the final question. So I'd like you to ask a question for my next guest. I'm having on Ellen Bennett. She's the founder of Headley & Bennett, which is a Los Angeles-based handcrafted apron company. So, Tanya, what would you like to ask Ellen?
Well, Ellen, I have a question about your aprons and their functionality. In my book, Food Fight, the last chapter is about 2050 and what we're going to be wearing and eating and growing at that point. And I'm wondering if aprons, like clothes, will be using heating elements within them. So scientists said that they are going to now have clothes that have either warming, embedded within their the fabric, or cooling. So you literally will walk around with like a little heater in your clothes or a little air conditioner. So Ellen, are your aprons going to be air conditioned or heated, do you think, in 10 years?
She's probably already working on it. Yeah, no, that's cool. Good question.
That would
we'll
be
find
such
out.
A great apron to buy. Can you imagine? You're really hot in the kitchen and you put on a cooling apron. Oh my goodness.
Yeah, I have cold hands and cold feet all the time, so I just want, I want the warm gloves that like you can function in, you know.
You can get then the heated apron that she'll be making
that has pockets or something.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yep.
That's for me. All right. Let's see if she's gonna do it.
All right.
Or we'll do it now. We'll see. So that's the show. Thank you so much for joining me. You're amazing. I don't know how you've accomplished everything you have, but it's so impressive. And just the fact that I know you and I'm going to continue to watch everything you're doing, I'm excited. So congratulations and thank you.
Thank you, Shari. It was really wonderful to be on. And as are you, amazing and exciting and wonderful. So
thank you. You're so sweet.
Thank you for having me. Really appreciate it.
Oh, you're welcome. Come back anytime.
Thanks.
So my guest today has been Tanya Steele. She's the executive director of IACP, which is the International Association of Culinary Professionals. Their website is IACP.com. Your website's TanyaSteele.com. Mm-hmm. And social media at IACP Culinary, or on Instagram, it's what, IACPPIX?
Yep.
And you're at Tanya Steele. Mm-hmm. So you can follow all of those, and you can follow me at Sherry Bayer, at Bayer PR, at All Industry. And my Facebook page is All in the Industry. My websites are BayerPublicRelations.com and SherryBayer.com. All of our shows are archived at HeritageRadioNetwork.org. We are also on iTunes, Stitcher, and Spotify. Thanks to my engineer today, Matt. And thanks again to Tanya. So heads up, next week, it's not going to be Ellen yet. Next week, I'm doing a fun on-the-road segment from my trip to Bali, where I have two interviews with Will Goldfarb from Room for Dessert and Ray Andrancia of Locavore. So I'm going to be doing that next week. And then the following week, I'm going to have Ellen on my show. So I hope you'll tune in to both of those. And thanks. I'm Sherry Bayer. Thanks for being part of All in the Industry. Bye.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at @heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.